the theme for the afternoon talk is intention, decision making, and action. In the discourses of the Buddha, there's a wide exploration, a very wide range of themes, and there is, amongst some maybe 5,000 odd discourses, there's an exceptional and remarkable care and precision in the language. And in fact, the Pali, the language of the Buddha, is really totally and fully devoted to mind-body consciousness, to our relationship to the world. So all the concepts and the themes which you and I use, that in the Pali there is a precision which we often don't have in the English. And this is where sometimes words have to be explained. I'll try to get the point over in a minute or two. And what I would like to do in the way of the talk is to take a particular statement of the Buddha, see how it applies in your and my life, and see what can be uncovered, discovered, insight, realized about. And I think you might agree it has relevance for each and every one of us. And I'll just take the bare context here, and one finds again, and I think we have to as well, look at what is called dependent arising processes. And what I mean by that, say for example, you're sitting or walking, and the initial intention is to be with the contact with the breathing. And for some reason or other, there's some kind of movement inside, and that original intention gets lost. You're all familiar with it. And from that original intention, perhaps some particular feeling has stimulated it. That could be pain in the body. It could be a memory. It could be a feeling about somebody else here or somewhere else. And then one notices from that dependent condition arises some thoughts about. And in those thoughts about, some ideas come, and proliferation, more and more thinking about. And from all of that, a whole story develops. So one has started off the original intention to be with the breathing. It's a very, couldn't be a more simple instruction than that, and it couldn't probably be more harder thing to do. And we lose contact with that, we get lost in a story, and then we say, my goodness, how did I get to this particular point? Because I started off with one intention, and I've ended up out there, some realm of consciousness full of stuff and stories going on. And sometimes, not that we have to, but sometimes we can trace back, wow, something happened, oh, I had a pain in the knee and it sent me off on some melodrama, or I had this nice feeling about somebody, I ended up in this amazing erotic fantasy, or whatever. And it just started off with a small sensation, and then whoa! And we've lost sight in the time of the original intentionality, and we've gone off somewhere. And certainly one important feature of our practice is to see that movement, and sometimes it's valuable to see if we can get back to where we started. Zen mind, beginner's mind, as the Zen will say. If in the story, pleasurable or painful, there is some pressure taking place, and it's very important for human beings to watch pressure. sometimes the pressure is in the body. We feel real some pressure in our body for all sorts of reasons. Health reasons, the build-up of tension, contractions and holding. Or sometimes we may not feel it so much in the body, but we know there's some pressure going on in our mind. You know, something is unresolved. Something has to have some attention. Something is not working out for us. So the pressure is there, the feelings are there, the sense of tension of is going along with it. When it reaches a level, and the level varies from person to person, when it reaches a certain level, there will be doubt. Guaranteed, almost for sure, doubt will arise. So we go from situation, feeling, attention, interest, and so forth. There may be some area which is somewhat unresolved, not working well for us. We begin to feel the pressure, and when the pressure gets too much, doubt will come. And quite often, the doubt may relate to the original intention. That's often where it, what it relates to, because it may be. So it's not surprising. I hear it, plenty of times. Oh, I'm doing my practice, but it's just not working for me. Whatever. I've got the intention, but I don't seem to get very clear there. It may be the somewhere something about the practice, but sometimes it's just that there is pressure somewhere else. We can't deal with that pressure, and sometimes we don't even know what the pressure is about. We're just feeling pressure, and we want to find something to feel pressure about. Meditation's always a good one, because of the sitting, walking, standing, the disciplines of the day, all the things that we should be doing, and put all of that there. And it may be about that, you know. Maybe pressure in our practice. We may be placing some pressure on ourselves, and somewhere, sometimes that pressure just wants to go somewhere. It just wants to land somewhere. It can land on anything or anybody in any way. So please look at contact, feeling, desire, pressure, doubt. And try to notice it, where that little sequence can arise in one's daily life, in one's meditations. Some contact about something, some feeling, some desire going on, some build-up of some pressure, and some doubt about it, whatever it might be. It might be a doubt about the pressure, or we take it off that issue and we'll put the doubt somewhere else. Mind would just want to go somewhere with it there. So coming back to the quote. Desire, the word, Pali word, some of you know, is tanha, conditions pursuit. Pursuit, didn't you? Everybody know the word pursuit? Mm. Running after, chasing after, pursuing. Do translate, please, because it won't come from me. And then the pursuit conditions the relationship we have to acquisition, another difficult word, getting. I want to have something, whatever it might be. And the acquisition, getting what I want, then begins to condition the decision making. And this loop, this circle, this cycle, easily we get caught in. And I just want to give a little commentary on this there. Pali has a nice rhythm. tanhang paticca pariyasana. Pariyasanya paticca liba. Libana paticca vimichaya. Poetic rhythm. I'm interested in poetic rhythms. I was talking to Lila about it. And with the first, this is all part of our process and getting to know ourselves. If I look at myself honestly, this is very difficult to do, because we either make it out to be worse than it is or better than it is, and then we're not being honest. So we want to look at ourselves honestly, neither worse nor better. And sometimes in the looking at ourselves, part of the honesty, coming back to the first point here, is when do I experience in my life a desire, a wanting, which is a condition for pursuing, for running after? What kind of circumstance in my life, this is knowing ourselves, do I experience some desire, some wanting, which then becomes the condition for pursuing, for running after? There. And sometimes we get an idea, whatever it could be about, and it kind of comes out of us, not necessarily an insight. No. Gosh, that would be nice. No, sometimes it just comes out of us as an idea, and we say, I really want. And from the really wanting, the pursuing starts. I think it's called the shopping mall. Well, sometimes. The primitive hunter-gatherer inside of us, going back to the cave, when we were in the caves, 20,000 years ago. It hasn't gone, It's been reborn in the supermarket. Hunting and gathering. And so sometimes I must have. See, the idea, no insight. The idea, I must have. And there is the pursuance of, the running after. And of course there is a massive amount of the daily stimulation, which is called advertising, to help feed into desire. Because without desire, advertising, it's all over. It's finished. And from the advertising, from the desire, can come the contact with a picture or an image, and we run after. And this is called consumerism, it's called there. But some people, it's not like that. Maybe some of you have been through the nightmare of consumerism and finished with it. Some of you may be just carrying a few hopes that you'll always get what you want in the material world, money, and which is the kind of the pathway to the Godhead of getting. But sometimes the desire and the pursuing, sometimes it's not into the material world. For some people, it's into the world of information, or a little bit of both. And then we can feel, not from any insight sometimes, we can feel, very humanly, I don't know. But the hard truth is, in life, we can never know everything. And if you, sometimes we say, gosh, I really would like to know about, so we go to college, or we go to university, to acquire more information and more knowledge. But whatever it is that you and I are interested in, the amount of knowledge we have compared with what's available is like a little fingernail. The proof of it is the internet. Endless, endless information. Endless, endless. And at some point, there is the desire, there is the pursuit of information. In this case, there's another. At what point do we come in and we say, enough is enough? What place inside of us does the information land? Because we're absorbing it, we're taking it in. There. So sometimes, I find for myself with the net. I look into the net, I want to know about something, I Google it. Apparently the people don't like the word Googling. Try to get it banned without success. So we Google in the word, then up comes the list. Most of us who use the net know this, and then we click, etc. But the pursuance, from the desire, from the pursuance, it can go on and on and on and on. One of my friends got so absorbed into the pursuance, she completely forgot that one leg was kind of resting on top of the other. And she's so total. And after an hour or two, she couldn't get the right leg off the top of the left leg. She was in absolute agony. This is not called an out-of-the-body experience. It's called forgetting that she's in the body. And she said it took an hour. Looked terribly painful, and the knee was locked, completely gone to sleep. Sometimes happens to yogis too, I have to say. And that sometimes just slowly, slowly, slowly. So, it's a small confirmation, shall we, statement. In my desire for, and in my pursuance of, let's say, material world or informational world, could I be blind or blocking other aspects of life? Could my movement through life be primarily desire, pursuing, and what's the relationship to the result? And sometimes, I'm sure you and I sometimes, we have pursued something just from the original idea, and we've got the desire, we've pursued it, and then we've got stuck with the outcome. Sometimes we have not realized that something we started, the consequences. One small gesture we start, I really must go to university, so we go back to school, back to university, and we've really committed ourselves, and we're there, and after a few weeks, oh my God, what have I done? I'm trapped in this knowledge factory. How do I get out of it? Etc. We start a relationship. It was only meant to be for the weekend. And it goes on. How do I get out of it? Etc. So, you know what I mean. Slight exaggeration, but you know. So sometimes, the Buddha's exploration and language is this coming back, this is what is meant by the text, coming back to see what is it that I initiate? Is there wisdom and clarity with it? And then, this point, I'll just take the next, and I'll take... he says, from this acquisition, from this, the outcome, from that what happens, whatever it is, and the way we view it, then comes a whole lot of decision making. How many people in this room will find yourself, ourself, at some point, today or tomorrow, whatever, in the idea of, I have decisions to make? And sometimes we use the adjectives. I have big decisions to make, major decisions to make, life-changing decisions to make, or whatever. And this, the language there, like many other adjectives that we use, and as I mentioned before, easily means that there is the outcome. It could be a successful I really wanted this, I pursued it, now I've got it. Whatever it might be about, really got it. But once one's got it, whatever the effect is, whatever the result is, even if we're really pleased with it, the pleasing factor will be a trigger for another decision. We can't stay fully contained continuously with what we get. So every time we get something, good, bad, ugly or indifferent, from the wanting, the pursuing, and what we get, might work out very well, it might not, whatever it might be about, this is life. That in the outcome of that, it will be a spark for more decision making. If it works out well, we say, oh, I'm going to do this some more. God, I've really made some real money. I'm going to really make a bucket load next time. So we get attached to the result. If the result is very painful, we say, oh my God, I've really got to change. I've got to make a new decision. The last decision was terrible. Now I've got to make a new decision. And so then it's a new desire, a new pursuing, and a new result, and another decision. Then death. It interrupts it all. It's so inconvenient. And this movement is going on with us. And sometimes, in decisions, it appears for us, very, very hard. This is the whole dynamic of this discourse. It becomes very, very hard for some people to make a decision. We don't know what to make the decision on. Because we looked at the past, we say, well, I've made these decisions, but it didn't work out. I've made these decisions, it did work out, but I don't want to do all this all over again. I got my BA, MA, PhD, not me, I have to say it, at the age of 15, chalo, I was gone, etc. But for some of you, respects. And so I say, well, I don't want to spend my life study, knowledge, etc. So I say, at some point in our life, the impact of the past, the result of the past, leaves us in a situation of, now I have to make a new decision in my life. And the impact of the old is still, partly, karma in a way, but the impact of the old is still reverberating, still impacting in the present. And when it's impacting in the present, it is extremely hard to make a clear decision. We haven't got the clarity because the old is still reverberating, it's still casting its shadow. And when it casts its shadow, it unsettles us inside. And when we feel unsettled, the decision making forms itself into the language of choices to help us feel a bit better. We say, well, I could choose to do this, whatever it might be. I'm at this point in my life where I could choose to do that or something else. I'm really at the crossroads. I'm at a junction in my life. I could go left, I could go right, I could go forwards, I could go backwards. I'm at that point in my life. And then you talk to other people. Disaster. Because quite often from our dear friends, they will say to us, if I were you, but you're not me, if I were you, I would do this. And of course, I mean, most of us have learned, I mean, one never asks the parents, well, unless you've got their therapists or something. Maybe Dharma teachers, I don't know. So sometimes we ask outwardly, And it can genuinely, seriously, can be helpful when we ask outwardly. But sometimes it seems to add to the indecision. We can't make up our mind. Somebody else thinks they know best. Or somebody might say to us, look, if I were you, I wouldn't do any of that. This is what I did. Oh no, now I've got another choice to deal with. And some people are in this perplexity, in this doubt, in this, what should I want? What should I pursue? What decision should I make? And we're back into it again. All of this, I'm sure somewhere in what I said, it has echoes for all of us. I think we've probably all known this a little bit. The language of choice, no matter what our educators, psychologists, advertisers, corporate world and governments tell us about choice, please don't swallow it. Don't buy the propaganda of choice. It's a relatively recent word in the last generation or two, this word. It wasn't around very much in the 60s, you know, it's a concept that's been built. It's a very good concept for selling, I have to say. But from an internal, inner viewpoint, choice in the Dharma, in this respect, is there is some movement going on in the deeper levels of one's being. There's a lack of equanimity in the being. There's a lack of steadiness in the being. And when at the deeper level of our being there is movement, it sends up waves. And when it sends up waves, the waves will bring about differences in the surface of our consciousness. And that will give the impression of choices. But actually it's movement going on inside. And when there's movement, the witness, and actually it's an ego witness here, the self, the I, the me, the my, up comes this movement and it says, oh, I could do that. That's the ego witness. I could do that. But maybe the decision I make should be to do this. Or maybe I'll try and do everything. Or do both. And we convince ourselves, I've got a choice. But quite often, the movement and the choices is all part of the complexity. It's all part of the noise in the mind. Choice, I have to make a choice, may not have any clarity in the words. It's just thoughts arising because there is some pressure deep down. And that pressure is giving the idea I've got lots of choices to make. This is why we explore inwardly. Perhaps if we can find some depth of calmness of being and a bit more steadiness deeper, perhaps this construct called desire, pursuing, getting or not getting what I want, and decision making coming as a result of getting or not getting what I want, maybe we can begin to see in another way. And that's part of our exploration and our practice. And it's at this point, and this is where we have to kind of feel this through for ourselves and explore this through, it's at this point that the language and the way of looking needs to change for us. And what I mean by that, just coming to the theme as well, a very important aspect of all of this is the intention and intentionality. I mean, if there is a major area in your life, major quote unquote, of priority and intention, sometimes we ask ourselves the question, what my primary intentions at present in my life. And to see whether the action feels to be full of wanting and desire. And the way that you know this is through the dependency on the result. That will tell you. So Dharma teaching is to take off the pressure off the result. The pressure of getting what I want. To recognize the validity of the intention. To be clear with the intention. To have the capacity to follow it through. And there are only three ways it can be followed through. Followed initially through the mind. We reflect, we feel. Followed through speech. And followed through the body. We do something. And can we free up the inner life, which means less grasping, in which we appreciate the importance of our intentions in life. We appreciate the importance of the action that follows it through, which shows trust, it shows confidence, it shows a clarity. And we know that it isn't a grasping, desiring, pursuing movement, because we know we're not dependent on the result. And reason for the exploration of no grasping of result, because the results are not in our hands. That's why. Sometimes the results are in the hands of others. Some of you have been for a job interview. And you go for a job interview. Got all these feelings arising. There, you've got the intentions there, and your securing of the job is dependent on the interviewers. The interviewers. One of them may have got out of the wrong side of the bed in the morning and had an argument with her husband, or he with his wife or his kids, not in a bad mood. You may walk in. And they may not like the colour of your hair. Or the way you sit. Or that you've coughed. And they think they're going to get pneumonia. So, any small event that the intention and the action, yes, beautiful. One follows it through, beautiful. But don't imagine by doing that it will all work out well. Without anything in life. And it's a great task in life to have the second link in the Eightfold Path is right intention. It means a fulfilling intention. A valuable intention, a worthwhile intention. And sometimes we have to stay true to that, and the trueness to it is the non-grasping, which means it can free itself to allow for the action, and extremely clear with the view with regard to the outcome about anything in life. Because if we don't, and there is the distortion of grasping, of holding to what we want, when the results come, we will either grasp it, and the ego will get bigger and bigger, I want more and more, or we'll grasp it, and the ego will get bigger in another way. It's just a bigger ego to say, I am a failure, as it is to say, I am a great success. It's both egotistical. Building ourselves up to be incredibly important, or rubbishing ourselves. It's just another ego trip. One in the pleasurable direction and the other in the painful direction, and very much bound. We had on the last retreat really wonderful man, and I hear this quite regularly from musicians. There is the intention, the action, all the discipline and the dedication and the practice. You know, it's a very committed exploration to develop the art. And some of you here, there are arts which you love and you're very committed to, or you're committed to knowledge, or committed to your practice. You know, it's very inspiring to be around people who have strong intentions and clear actions. But as he was pointing out to me, he's in an orchestra, that in the world of the orchestra, the competitiveness is huge. That one might be a player, you know, perhaps one section of the orchestra. And just between the musicians, you'll have the senior one. There. You've got the first instrument, he's the senior. And then you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, maybe. And 1, 2, 3, and 4 want to be number one. And places only come up every 5, 10. He says in his section of the orchestra, every 20 years there's a spare place. So they're waiting for number one to drop dead or drop out or go. They want to move along the line, etc. And so there's the art. Precious and beautiful to listen to music, to listen to the musician. Culture is important. But unfortunately, all too common, there's a whole subtext going on. And the subtext is results, comparing the desire to want to be somebody, to be special. And that starts to overshadow the beauty, the love of the art. The ego's got in the way. Yeah. And I remember Mr. Who was the guy of the...
Yeah, that punk guy?
No. The orchestra leader for the Berlin Philharmonic. What was it? Years ago. Karajan, his name. Years ago. 10 or 20 years ago. And this is from the orchestra. There was a joke that was going around, and one musician said, an angel of God came to me one night and said, you are the greatest musician in this orchestra. The angel of God came and said, you are the finest musician in this orchestra. The angel of God said, God, I'm the special one, I'm the greatest. And then the next one came and said, no, you're not. God came to me directly. Didn't need an angel. Came to me directly and said, you are the greatest musician in this orchestra. And Herbert von Karajan said, I don't remember saying that. Wicked, wicked, wicked. So sometimes, with the skill and the creativity and what you and I are committed to and our intentions, and how easily the eye and the mind just grab. And our practice is not ignoring the beauty and preciousness of intentions, nor is it ignoring the actions and the way you and I can express ourselves in precious ways in daily life. But it's to be as, not easy, but to be as clear in that movement as possible, and to have a sense, can I live in that way, but it doesn't feel, and it doesn't seem to be around desire, pursuing, acquisition, getting what I want, and all the outcome of getting what I want, pleasurable or painful. It's a movement. It may look similar to others from the outside, but from the inside, it's different. And this does generate, genuinely bring a lot of challenge, a lot of happiness. We need equanimity for the outcomes of what we do, for sure. We can feel the sweetness and when it works well. We can be steady when it's not working well for us. But we've understood a different kind of process. And in that process of that intention and action, where there's not a lot of grasping, there's also not fear either. Where there's grasping, there will always be fear. And so we're exploring this. The other, there, in the other aspect of this, is the importance of recognizing non-intentionality, but recognizing non-intentionality in a clear and wise way. And what I mean by that is, sometimes in life, very often in life in fact, if the self, the I, me and my, even with wise intentionality, feels that life just runs through our intentions. It's all about intentions and everything else. Clear intentions, clear actions, clear relationships. We think life is just about that. It will place too much emphasis, of course, on intentions. And we think, well, because my intentions are clear and honest and true and thoughtful, and my actions that follow, doesn't mean to say that therefore things should work well. No guarantee for that. And part of the reason for that in life is many things happen to us, many things, which have no bearing whatsoever on our intentions. And this we have to be extremely clear about. You know, our intentions cannot protect us from every event. And, to take the obvious here as an example, the past, no matter near past or distant past, you and I don't know what the impact, the DNA, the genetic influences, environmental influences from years ago, hereditary factors. We could be living our life wisely and clearly and skillfully and taking care and exercise with diet and with posture and with energy and the way we use our life. Has no guarantee that that thoughtful and intelligent and caring way of living can protect us from the impact of the past. It can't protect the Buddha, let alone protect us. That it can't do. And so sometimes events happen to us, so you just use one example, it's called the past in this case, which impact upon our lives which have no connection with intentionality. We never ask for it, we never wish for it, etc. And I get very, very concerned, deeply concerned, in fact, when sometimes, when some people, something is happening in their life, in their body, in this case, and sometimes in these Buddhist, New Agey, spiritual circles that run around, you know, you get the message, well, you must have done something. You must have wished this upon yourself. There's something about the way you've been living that's caused all of this, etc. And that, I feel, is a very dangerous ideology. It's extremely disrespectful to the person. And if there is some desire and acquisition going on, then hopefully some sharing and dialogue will see the relationship My father died at 70, and why did he die at 70? And with years of severe ill health, because at the age of 13 he started smoking cigarettes. And eventually cigarette smoking killed him. And his breathing got worse and worse, etc. Why? There was desire, there was pursuance, the daily packets of cigarettes, there was the consequence, and no matter how many times, because it was so addictive that we spoke to my father, he still struggling to have the cigarettes. And my father died at the age of 70, and rather painfully, I have to say, in the last few years. He couldn't even walk across the living room without needing an armchair to rest on to catch his breath. And I would say the cigarette smoking through all of these years was a major contribution to the collapse of his lungs. My mother never smoked, and today it's her 90th birthday. And I rang her up a little while ago. Oh, Mum, how are you? She said, she's in old people's home. I'm having a lovely time. They made a huge, big chocolate cake for me. Not that she's supposed to eat it, because she's severely diabetic and on the needles, but, you know, it's 90th birthday. And they got the balloons out, and they called her the Queen of England. And, with my mother, she would rather, this is seventh heaven for her today, I must say, and she said it's seventh heaven. And I spoke to my sister. My mother's very Catholic-like, Roman Catholic-like. Whoa. My mother, she just loves being in seventh heaven. And I said to my sister, my mother would rather be in seventh heaven than in the kingdom of heaven. She loves the attention. Etc. And sometimes, as I say, in the relationship, the old, and yet some people have bodies like metal. I mean, there are people who smoke. I'm just using it as a small example. Who smoke and smoke. And they live 70, 80, 90. Think, how is it that their system, they're still functioning? It's against the nature. They must have some metal inside. I don't know what it is there. And other people, the organic life, it's extremely sensitive. Extremely sensitive. They have no idea the impact there. And our practice is to be clear, as I mentioned, to repeat the movement of intentions in life and our relationship to that. To get the sense, it's not easy, as I pointed out, to let that movement be free. It's free when it's free from the imprisonment to desire, pursuing, running after, getting what I want, and all the decision making that comes when I've got what I want or I didn't get what I want. We're trying to look at things in a different kind of way, and that helps to free up our being, and especially clear and spacious around results. Clear and spacious. Many factors, outer factors, unknown factors, past factors give shape to outcome. Many factors. It's a great practice to find a steadiness and a clarity with outcomes of events. May all beings live with awareness. May all beings take a deep interest in the movement and expressions of the inner life. May all beings find a natural freedom in the movement. Let's have that quiet minute together. Mm-hmm.